Welcome to All Analytics Radio. This is Jim Connolly, editor of allanalytics.com. With all the talk about the Internet of Things and how we connect thousands of devices to drive efficiency, we also have to consider some of the possibilities for downstream applications. Those would be uses for data that may have originated outside of our own organizations. Today we're examining one such scenario, and that is how the use of IoT data can change the relationship between an insurance company and its customers. Whether those customers are huge enterprises with hundreds of facilities or individual home and policy holders. I'm pleased to have Gwen Bizard of the AT Group with us today on All Analytics Radio. Gwen is co-founder and research director at the AT Group, where he leads the insurance practice. He has been looking at the impact of that the IoT can have on the insurance business. Welcome, Gwen. How are you today?
Very good. It's a pleasure to be with you on this show, Jim.
Well, thank you for joining us. Before we get into the discussion, let me add a note for the listeners. We welcome your questions and comments on the chat board below, and we will address as many as we can during the next half hour. Then Gwen will join us on the chat board for a bit to answer any additional questions. To get the discussion started, I invite listeners to introduce themselves to their peers on the chat board and perhaps share your own observation on the potential changes that IoT could bring to the insurance sector. Gwen, let's start with where the insurance sector is today. What are a couple examples of how insurers are utilizing IoT data already?
Right. So IoT means a lot of different things to different sectors, and there is a wide range of application. So some have been around for actually a number of years, and we used to call it a bit differently. Like think of UBI, usage-based insurance, or also pay-as-you-drive. It's a different term as well for car insurance. Another term you may hear, of course, is car telematics, which is still a popular way of talking about telematics insurance with cars, whether we're talking about personal cars or for fleet management. So that product actually has been around for a number of years, and but the technology is evolving, and so now it's increasingly legitimate to talk about it as part of the IoT space because the usage-based insurance, car telematics, it used to be powered by proprietary technology. You had to plug into the car, but now we have solutions that simply use your smartphone, and simply using your smartphone and an app on your smartphone may actually enable an insurance company to provide coverage, track your behavior and then provide coverage. So that's a typical example of IoT in the context of insurance. Is it's usage-based insurance or pay-as-you-drive using dongles, or now increasingly using a smartphone app using the device you carry with you everywhere. Go ahead.
I'm sorry, go ahead. I was just going to ask,
so
when it comes to access data.
I'll let you finish.
Actually, you're going to mention other applications. That would be great.
Sure, yeah. So other applications, we are seeing IoT being applied in the context of insurance in other areas, in the context of the home with a smart home concept, like an insurance company being able to encourage you to deploy devices like a flood sensor and other devices to make your house less likely to have any damages like a flood event. We also see it in the context of in a business context with insuring buildings and infrastructure and so on, in the context of transportation, shipping, And also, even in the context of life insurance. So, you would think, well, what does life insurance have to do with IoT devices? But one of the major life insurance companies in the U.S., John Hancock, which is part of Manulife, has struck a partnership with Vitality, a South African company that has used IoT for many years. And what they are deploying in the U.S. is a solution where your life insurance company is actually interested in keeping you alive for a long time and having hopefully a healthy life. So they provide you with a Fitbit, a type of tracker, and you get so by communicating data with your life insurance company, you participate into a reward program, and you get you may also be you may also get discounts on your life insurance premium by showing your insurer that you're staying active and so on. So it's really spreading across all corners of the insurance industry. It's not just about car insurance anymore.
So when it comes to accessing IoT data, does the whole process rely on mandatory or voluntary participation by customers, or are insurers holding out a carrot, such as, premium discounts for customers who willingly share their data?
It's mostly carrots as opposed to mandatory. Insurance company are like any in most instances, insurance companies are really like any other business. They have customers, and customers are king. So it's not always the perception that that consumers may have of insurance companies. They tend to look at it as the big the big bad evil, but it nobody likes really insurance. So, but they again, insurance company have to have customers, and it's a lot easier to use carrots than try to force new thing onto customers. And also insurance in particular is highly regulated, so insurance company have to also I guess have to move very cautiously in that regard. They can't especially in the US, you have different insurance regulation in different states, so it's regulation is a complicating factor, of course, in terms of what they can do or not do and so on. So the carrot is mostly what they tend to be to use, especially with consumers. In a B2B context, with corporation and so on, it's a bit different. They may have a bit more room, I guess, to drive. I wouldn't say mandatory, but more through for many years, insurance company in a business context have had the services where they would come in and they would tell you, hey, you should do this, you should do that, in order to lower the risk that your building is going to go up in flames. And so it's a service that many insurance company have provided for many, many years. And usually, it ties to if you implement, all the recommendations from the insurance company, then, you may be eligible for discounts and so on. So businesses usually are keen to work with their insurance company in that respect in order to lower their premium. So I wouldn't say it's really mandatory, and it's not really the stick, but it's more like the advisory nature of insurance working with businesses, and then you get a lower premium. So yeah, more of a carrot, I guess.
I think the polite word would be they have leverage, whether you participate or not.
Somewhat, I think they don't have as much, though. I think the popular perception is that insurance company, again, have all the cards in their hands, but insurers really don't feel that way. On the consumer side, it's a very competitive market. It's very easy to switch insurance company if you don't like your insurer and so on. And on the business side, it's a little bit the same situation. There is a lot of what we call capacity in insurance, where you have just a lot of insurance company out there willing to write a policy for businesses. So it's quite competitive. So they don't have as much, I guess, leverage sometimes that we may think.
Now, I'm intrigued by the potential when you talk about the corporate world. When you mentioned fleet management. That would seem to be a huge opportunity for an insurance company, and you know, not only to control their costs, but to you know, provide incentive to a delivery service or someone like that to, you know, hire the best drivers, keep their fleet properly maintained, you know, because that's where, you know, costs on both sides can get out of hand pretty easily.
Right. So there are many, you know, examples that many applications. Honestly, one of the applications that I have found the most intriguing in the context of in the business context has been actually in the context of employee health and employee safety in the workplace. So, you know, I was talking recently, for instance, to an insurance company in Europe providing complementary health insurance to corporations. And so one thing they're starting to work on is, you know, in the context of manufacturing, you have, obviously you have, when you work in the, when you deal with a business, with a manufacturing facility, you have, you know, high risk of injury, and there is a lot of, I mean, you have regulation kicking in as well, and you have, just there is a, quite a bit of attention to mitigating risk. Risk of death, of course, but also risk of, you know, a range of injuries due to the machinery and so on. So, and just things like, you know, people sleeping on the floor. And so they are, like, you know, in the process of working with a few clients, like deploying vests, like safety vests, for instance, that are equipped with sensors. And so there are solutions popping up that where insurance company will be able to gather data from the field, from what's going on in the factory or in, you know, in the construction site with, like, with smart hat and smart safety vest, and you can use the data for monitoring, you know, what's going on, and providing advisory services to the client, so you can help them mitigate the risk of loss and the risk of injury, and you can also help clients deal with regulation around workplace safety. So I found that very interesting, you know, especially when you get to the point of embedding sensors in your safety, in your clothes.
Now that level of data collection seems like it'd be perfect to develop not just information about the individual insured company, but aggregated data that establishes baselines and best practices.
Right. Right. And that you know, yeah. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Now, let me just ask you, have, you know, like research organizations like FM Global and National Fire Protection Association or any government agencies set standards for data sharing and privacy when it comes to insurers?
So, I guess there's no, like, I'm not aware of any, like, new standards related necessarily to IoT specifically beyond what exists today. You know, keep in mind this is all very new still. So I don't think we have, like, new standards or regulations specifically pertaining to IoT data and insurance, for instance. You know, but I think there's already a lot of regulation that applies to privacy. You know, so you know, I think that still applies. You have to realize that insurance company, even though, like, if I take the example of car insurance and usage-based insurance, so there are a number of insurance companies in the U.S., for instance, have deployed usage-based insurance. So that, you know, there are consumers out there with devices in their cars or using smartphone application to, and that's how they get, you know, insurance. It's tied to those devices. So in most cases, insurance companies are not collecting half of the data that they could collect. In most cases, they are not. And if they are collecting the data, they are not doing much with it. So Like they won't, you know, if you sign up for usage-based insurance in the U.S., typically they won't penalize you if you start driving like a maniac a few months later. They'll basically just, you know, live with it and won't do anything about it. So, and the reason is, regulation aside, it's you have the concern, and you know, again, regulation being an aspect, but you simply have the issue of consumer acceptance. What is socially accepted? And it's still a touchy issue, you know. The issue of, and it's going to remain, of course, a very you know, touchy issue of delicate issue of how much data can you collect and what can you do with it, and you know, the whole concern of a Big Brother. So even if, you know, no formal standard regulation is in place, I would say a lot of those companies are treading very, very carefully in this space.
Now, do you find that entities in the corporate world are more willing to share their data to get a discount than, say, the average consumer?
Yeah, I think it's a lot easier in a business context. And again, and part of what it's also more accepted. It's something that has been going on, as I said earlier. You know, businesses are used to working with insurance company and getting consultants or engineers from insurance companies showing up and working with them on making recommendation how to lower the risk of like accidents in the workplace or fires, you know, also. So it's far more accepted and in a business context. It's certainly newer in a in, on the consumer side, and it's something that still need to be sorted out. I mean, again, part of the challenge is the perception that in the insurance industry faces. Most consumers don't have a great opinion of insurance, even though insurance play is actually so part of the challenge is because consumers, you know, feel like they don't really get a lot for their money with insurance. They feel like they write, you know, they pay the premium every year. And or every month, and they don't get anything in return. The reality is, like 90% of insurance customers, you know, 90% of consumers don't file a claim on any given year. So yeah, they do pay for a service, and they really don't see any value for it. I mean, there is, if you think a little bit about it, there is a ton of value that, you know, the insurance company will be here if your house burns down, and that may save you from bankruptcy. So there is a lot of value, but it's just not tangible, you know. And most of the things we buy as consumers tend to be tangible, things we can touch, experience, and use, and discount as well when we are done with it. And insurance is just something you keep paying for, and you may not see any value in years. Hopefully, yes.
Now there's a pattern that we've seen, particularly in the last, say, 30 or 40 years, where building codes and enforcement, you know, whether they're fire codes, they're in, you know, workplace safety codes, have really minimized some of the major safety issues in both, you know, in the corporate world, in the home, even, you know, in multifamilies. Does the IoT actually have potential to take that even another couple steps further in terms
Absolutely.
of
Absolutely.
Just, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the one of the promises of IoT is to make the world an even safer place. And it's not just IoT. If you think about going back to the, you know, usual example of cars, if you think about the autonomous car, well, you know, in the long run, if we're all jumping into autonomous cars, well, and you're not driving, then I guess you don't need car insurance. So you know, IoT, of course, is, you know, again, one of the promises is to make the world safer and lower the risk. And so if you lower the risk, you reduce the risk pool, and so there is less to insure. So there are many aspects of of the economy that are insured today, and the level of insurance needed may, in the long run, may actually shrink because we have and IoT again is not the only answer to everything, but it's certainly one of the facilitators. You know, think about, again, going back to a consumer example, but think about your house. If your house is equipped with small sensors, smarter sensors, and you can detect a fire, you know, faster, and you know, and get faster response, you may be able to again limit, you know, the damage. Same with, you know, with a flood. So, yeah, ultimately IoT is likely to reduce the risk pool and reduce the market opportunity for insurance company to collect premiums.
Now, earlier this week, I was the track chair and moderator on an IoT summit at the Interop conference, and I was very impressed with the speed with which IoT is happening. You know, we've all looked at it as some kind of, you know, mushy, soft concept for the future. It's amazing how many companies are actually running IoT applications, you know, in a live environment now.
Right.
So it would seem like the insurance companies really want to catch up and move pretty fast here. I know that's not really their history of being quick off the dime. Is that, do they really have to step up their initiatives here?
I think so. Yeah, I mean, broadly speaking, the insurance industry is not necessarily, you know, an industry that you would think being super fast moving and so on. And in many respects, it's true. But in some respect, it's not always true. Think about, you know, companies like Uber. You know, Uber is the unicorn of all unicorns, and, you know, fast rising, you know, startup and so on, and disrupting the taxi industry and so on, not just in the U.S. but in many countries. And but that company, you know, And of course, Uber. Think about Uber going against existing regulation in so many cities and counties and states, and using popular pressure on, you know, on regulators and politicians to get things their way. Not everywhere around the world, but, you know, definitely quite successfully in the U.S. And so that company would not really have been able to operate and grow without some form of insurance. So not every insurer stepped up to provide insurance to Uber and their drivers, but some have. So, you know, some insurance company, again, have played an important role in enabling that, you know, disruptive business. So, yes, mm-hmm. When you think about the insurance industry as a whole, it's not necessarily a fast-moving industry, but when you look at specific niches and examples, you do find, you know, you always find companies willing to jump in and work, you know, with the new players and the, you know, and the, you know, and so on.
If you were to look to the future, I was going to say, if you were to look to the future, what would be perhaps a dream application that you would see an insurance company using that benefits both the insurer and the insured?
Well, it's not necessarily a dream application, but, you know, like a single, you know, dream application. But I think there are really use cases where insurance company could do a lot more now. And, you know, I guess in car insurance, insurance company could do a lot more. You already have, I mean, some of the early adopters are doing quite a good job deploying services and not just, you know, using the data to give you a lower discount. So, you know, think of like a Metro Mile in the U.S. It's a startup insurance company, and they use pay as you drive, and they will alert you, for instance, if your car is parked in a street where there is like a parking ticket swipe. So if the you know, the I guess is the folks from the city swiping the street and giving tickets to cars that haven't paid their meter. So you'll get an alert. So you can go and replenish you know the meter using your phone or running to your car to do that. So it's you know it's a simple basic service, but it's kind of interesting to see an insurance company doing something like that.
Now, I'm not familiar with pay-as-you-drive. What does that involve?
Pay-as-you-drive is so basically today for your car insurance, you pay your insurance company decides how much they're going to charge you in most states based on your credit score. So, you know, and you're probably scratching your head and asking, what does my credit score have to do with my driving? Well, it has been proven to be a very good proxy to your credit score is a good proxy of your driving risk. So that's what most insurance companies in most states are using today. And they use other, you know, other factors as well, but that's one of the typical factors they use. With pay as you drive, the idea is that some consumers in the U.S. may not drive, you know, as much, and ultimately the score, like the, you know, and so the idea is to basically simply charge your insurance not based on your credit score, where you live, or stuff like that, or you know your age or whatever, but it's based on how many miles you drive. And if you drive less than 10,000 miles a year, pay as you drive may actually save you some money. So you know, it's right now it's a pretty good product for people who drive less than 10,000 miles. And again, you pay per mile your insurance. So it's a form of usage-based insurance. Yeah, so it's not like Metro Miles. They don't check your driving behavior, like you know, do you speed, do you brake, you know, that type of stuff. They may collect that information, but they don't use it for pricing purposes. That's more the next step, to use your behavior to determine, you know, to decide what to charge you.
That's intriguing. Now, for those listeners who work, you know, for insurance companies, I know you have looked at the vendor market in terms of IoT software platforms specifically designed for insurers. How mature is that market, and what does it need to do?
So there are many companies out there calling themselves a platform or an IoT platform. And the space might be very confusing. What I looked at specifically recently was I looked at vendors that could provide a platform that would aggregate, that would enable to run a wide range of IoT products. So today, if you're an insurance company and you're deploying like usage-based insurance, you know, a telematic insurance solution, you're going to pick XYZ vendor. And then if you say, oh, you know, this is great, but I want to do something for the smart home, then you need to think about, then your car telematics provider is pretty much useless. Because all they know, you know, they're very good at dealing with telematics data and car data, but they're not prepared to accommodate the use case of the smart home. And then if you're a large carrier and you say, oh, I want to do something with my shipping customers or my you know, manufacturing customers, and then you have all those IoT use cases you'd like to accommodate. You don't really have a vendor today that has a platform to support all of that. So the report, where my research was to look into who's out there with a platform like that. Who are the vendors that are trying to build a platform to help insurance, to be the one-stop shop where an insurance company can go and work with a vendor in order to support, you know, a wide range of use cases, not just like car telematics insurance.
And that's
and so
as much at,
yeah.
That's as much at the data collection aspect as anything else, not just the analytics, but
Yeah, so, you know, the platform, you have to be able to collect the data. So you have issues that have nothing to do with technology, which is, that are more political in nature. You know, if you want to collect data from, I don't know, if you want to collect data from your clients, well, how do you get the data? You know, your clients need to be willing to share the data. How do you negotiate that? If you want to leverage, I'll give you an example here. And again, I'll take a car example. But if you want, so you may need to collect data from different sources. And so you need to get access to the data. So for instance, you know, if you need to get, if you want to provide telematic insurance and you want to understand when people are speeding, well, you need to know what's the posted limit. So you need to tap into not only whatever device may be in the car, but you need to be able to tap into third-party databases that will give you, you know, all the posted limits across the U.S., if you want to identify, you know, risky roads, like, okay, I want to see if my customers are typically commuting on a pretty risky road, like because the road is not well maintained, tons of potholes, or because it's a road known for accidents, you need to tap into, again, other databases. So where do you find the data? And do the companies that have the data, a public organization or private organization, are they willing to share the data? And at what cost? So when you think of the IoT platform, you think about vendors that also will have the resources and the interest, the commitment to help you, you know, negotiate data deals, you know, trade access to data. And that's just one piece of the puzzle. But as you can see, it's not so much a technology issue. It starts as it's a business issue of, you know, how do you make it a win-win deal for with all those parties that have data.
So it's process as much as technology that presents a challenge.
Right, that's one challenge. And then, you know, you need to be able to bring that data and of course, have the analytics firepower to, you know, crunch it. And then, you know, you need to be able to tie the data to something meaningful. So, one thing also is you need to be able to normalize the data as well. So, you know, I'll use the same example here because I think it's easier for most people in the audience to understand. But if you think of, again, telematics, it's the same issue with everything we talk about, you know, whether it's in the context of manufacturing or shipping or transportation and so on, or health, you know. But if you think of, let me use an example in the context of health insurance. You know, if you have a program like John Hancock with Vitality that I mentioned earlier, where you want to trade consumers giving you their health data against a discount in their life insurance premium, it means that you need to collect data from devices, and you may ship a device, you know, a Fitbit to consumers, and you control the device, but you may also just let consumers pick whatever devices they want, whether it's an Apple Watch or a Fitbit or another brand. The problem, there are two problems. One is you have different devices, and so you need to be able to normalize the data between those devices. As many people in the audience probably know, every wearable device tracking how many steps you have every day is going to give you a different answer. Your smartphone, your Apple Watch, and your Fitbit are going to give you a different number of steps walked during the day, even though you may have carried them, you know, with you all day long. So they are calibrated a bit differently. So a platform would have to deal with that. Is that, you know, if you collect data, great, but how do you normalize the data? And then over time, the technology evolves. Over time, you know, 5 years later, what kind of wearable devices are we going to use? You know, is it going to be Fitbit, and what kind of Fitbit technology? And so all of those devices, not only do you have new devices hitting the market, but everything changed. So you need to keep, in order for the program to still make sense, for the data to make sense, you need to normalize the data over time. And that's very, very hard to do. And so And so that's one of the challenges for those platforms, is to be able to normalize data across so many use cases. So,
great.
Yep.
Gwen, we've actually come down to the bottom of the hour here, and we're ready to move over to the text chat. I see there are a couple of great questions from the audience out there now. And what you've outlined in terms of the challenges and the opportunities here sounds like there's plenty to keep our audience of analytics professionals busy. This has been a great discussion, and it would be great to watch how things unfold over the years. For the audience, Gwen will join us on the chat board in a few minutes. I want to thank Gwen Bizard of the ITA Group for being with us today. And thanks to all of you for joining us and to SAS for sponsoring this event. This has been Jim Connolly for All Analytics Radio and UBM Tech. Thank you for tuning in. And Gwen, thank you for sharing your thoughts.
Thank you, Jim. It was my pleasure.
Great. Have a nice day.
You too. Bye-bye.